Welcome back to the Rainbow Studio here in the Yawa blog. I am your host, Craig Wynn. We are pursuing episode 3 of Mohammed's Criminal Enterprise. It is something that most people don't know, and yet everyone should be aware that Islam did not begin as a religion. It began as Mohammed's means to steal whatever was available to him. He did not care whether somebody prayed or not. He didn't even care what name someone chose for his God. In fact, he would use Rabbi, he would use Rahman, he would use Raham, he would use Allah, Allahi, Allahu, Manat, Alat, Al-Uzza. There are a host of different names that Muhammad chose. He didn't really care. He didn't care that he was negated as a prophet in the Quran that he was reciting. He didn't care if every one of his Quran recitals was utterly confusing, plagiarized, twisted, perverted. He didn't even care that the number one theme throughout the Quran is the never-ending argument where those who knew Muhammad best called him a charlatan, a complete fraud, someone who was demon-possessed and insane, literally making this up as he was going along by stealing the religious lore of other people. All Muhammad cared about was sex, power, and money. Full stop. And so the very realization that Islam began as a criminal enterprise, that Muhammad was a sand pirate, and that he was a far cruder, far more violent, far more ruthless version of Genghis Khan than he was a person, even who were in the same hemisphere as Moshe, Moses. So this is a man who was no messenger of God. He was no prophet. He wasn't the founder of a great religion. He was nothing but a con artist, a godfather of a criminal enterprise. So we're going to continue with the story of the lead up to what is called the Battle of Badr, which was the robbery of a caravan of his own kin. We'll commence with Ishaq, page 289. As a reminder, when I cite anything from Ibn Ishaq, which is the Sirat Rasul Allah, it's the life of Allah's messenger. It is from the Oxford University Press, translation that was done by Ghulim, now some 70 years ago. And if we quote, as we will, Tabati, which is the history of Islam's formation, it's called the Tariq. That will be from the Sunni Press, which is the State University of New York, which published a comprehensive presentation of Ibn Ishaq's history. These are the two oldest, most credible, and contextual sources of the words and deeds of Muhammad. And without the words and deeds of Muhammad, there is no Islam. The Quran is a senseless and convoluted, out of context and chronology diatribe that makes no sense whatsoever. As a matter of fact, without these hadith, the 8th surah, which is Allah's rendition of the skirmish at Badr, which, by the way, means moon, there is no understanding it. So these hadith and the Quran are hand in glove, interlaced fingers in Islam. And the simple truth is that without the hadith, the Quran cannot be followed because it orders Muslims to follow Muhammad's example. And Muhammad's example and his orders, his words, are only known to us through these hadith accounts. So this is Ishaq 289. Muhammad summoned the Muslims and he said, "This is the Quraysh caravan containing their property. Go out and attack it. Perhaps Allah will give it to us as prey." Let that sink in. These are not the lines Moses would have uttered. These are not the lines that Daud would have spoken. These are the lines of an unbridled libertine that had no morality whatsoever. The man who would say this, "This is the caravan of my family, of my kin, of your people, our people. This is the caravan of our fathers. Go out and attack it. Steal their property. Perhaps our wannabe God will give it to us as prey." These lines forever damn Islam's pretense of religiosity. And so they bear repeating. This is the Quraysh caravan containing their property. Go out and attack it. Perhaps Allah will give it to us as prey. Little wonder that Tamerlane converted Mongols to Muslims before butchering mankind. One doesn't get an endorsement to be disgusting, to be evil, to be covetous that exceeds this. The motivation, of course, was nothing but piracy, not religion. The historian, Tabati, volume 7, page 29, reports, "Abu Sufyan and the horsemen of the Quraysh were returning from Syria following the coastal road. When Allah's apostle heard that about them, he called his companions together and told them of the wealth that they had with them and the fewness of their numbers. The Muslims set out with no other object than Sufyan and the men with him. They did not think that this raid would be anything other than easy booty." This, ladies and gentlemen, particularly if you are in Israel and you're being tormented by this godforsaken religion, you need to know that there is nothing holy, nothing sacred, nothing divine about it. It isn't even a religion in the sense of anyone else having postulated such a thing over time. This is nothing but a criminal enterprise, and it remains a criminal enterprise. That is all there is to Islam. Let's read it again. I want to make certain that you understand this. This is from Tabati, who was the first Quran commentator and Islam's first historian. Abu Sufyan, who was a leader of Muhammad's kin in Mecca, in Petra, Kaabaville, there was no Mecca at the time. But Abu Sufyan was a businessman. And this says he was on horse, but the likelihood it would be on camel, although there's a potential of horsemen. He would have been out of Petra, which formed a line, if you will, between the end of the Gulf of Aqaba and the Mediterranean coast. And so for that short distance, goods would have to be transported overland, and that's what they were doing. The Quraysh is Muhammad's tribe. They are his people, meaning that these are the people who knew Muhammad best. They are the ones who are the other side of the never-ending argument where they are constantly saying, "Muhammad is, you know it, it's obvious, you're a complete fraud. Your Quran is not from God. It's plagiarized from other people. You've twisted it to the point that you're insane. And this whole thing that you're doing is because you're demon-possessed and you're covetous." Those were the Quraysh. They were returning from Syria. They're most likely returning from, well, it says the coastal road. Yes, they were on the coastal road, all right. They were going to the Mediterranean coast of Syria. When Allah's apostle heard about them, and he, you know, again, at this point, Allah was just being introduced to Islam, because prior to the migration from Kaabaville to Yathrib, God was every name under the sun, but not Allah. And Muhammad was not an apostle. He just heard the term used by Christians, and he coveted anything that belonged to anyone else. He heard about them. He told his companions about the wealth that they had with them and the fewness of their numbers. In other words, they would be easy prey. Lots of money, no one to keep us from stealing it. So the Muslims set out for no other purpose than Sufyan and the men with him. So they weren't just trying to rob the caravan. People were prey. The object was Sufyan and the men with him, because with men, they could ransom them. They could do exactly what the Muslims did in Israel on 10/7 of 23. They abducted innocent people going about their lives so that they could trade them. They could ransom them for something that they wanted, and unfortunately, Israel capitulated and played along. They did not think there would be anything other than easy booty, and people were part of that booty. Now, these armed raiders wanted to steal assets and kidnap people. Since the Prophet's sole motivation, by his own admission, was plunder, not piety, Islam cannot be good. For those who want to coronate it as such, they should, well, canonize Blackbeard and call him a prophet too. He was more compassionate about stealing. He only stole from royalty, not from his own family. The realization that the first adherents of this perverse doctrine recorded this stunning admission of guilt reminds me of the Nazis and the way they chronicled their atrocities in World War II. Immoral, hateful, and violent doctrines like Islam and Nazism corrode men's souls and their minds, their hearts, making their consciences dysfunctional to the point that they become unable to differentiate right for wrong. This is what we witness in all of the preaching we hear by Muslims throughout Europe and to a large degree by the progressives that are allied with them. They have lost the ability to think rationally. They are ignorant, immoral, irrational, all of these things. And that is what happened to the Nazis. It is what has happened to the Muslims. It is the only way that you could have people really dancing, their children dancing and partying, throwing out candy before the coffins of babies that they abducted and then murdered. I mean, it takes a special kind of evil to degrade oneself to that point. And this evil is the derivative of Muhammad's criminal enterprise, where good became bad, the worst evils that man can imagine: human trafficking, armed robbery, murder, torture, redeemed good in this perverse religion. Ridding the world of those they viewed as inferior, stealing their possessions and lives, became part of the Muslim mission. It remains so today. It was now Islam's foremost good deed, worthy of heroic lore and unfettered access to the boys and the babes in the Garden of Bliss. As further proof that the Badr raid was an act of terrorism, another hadith reports. This is from Bukhari. It is Volume 5, Book 59, Number 702. Allah did not admonish anyone who had not participated in the Ghazwa. Ghazwa is a terrorist raid of Badr. For in fact, Allah's apostle had only gone out in search of the Quraysh caravan so that he could rob it. Corroboration upon corroboration that Islam was conceived to be a terrorist manifesto, a criminal enterprise, and the only association with God and Muhammad was that he was a godfather, just like the head of the mafia. But Allah arranged for the Muslims. Oh yes, Allah didn't do anything ever, never once lifted a fang on behalf of Muslims. So Allah is absolutely the most impotent deity of all history. But nonetheless, Muslims are to believe that when it comes to robbing your own family, when it comes to killing them, when it comes to kidnapping them for ransom, Allah's all in, baby. That's Allah's kind of stuff. Allah arranged for the Muslims and their enemy. They're no more enemy than the man on the moon. They just happen to have wealth, and they happen to be Muhammad's family and the family of those who would attack them, to meet by surprise. It was the Aqaba pledge with Allah's apostle when we gave our lives in submission, but the Badr battle was more popular among the people. Keep in mind here that this is now another reference to the Aqaba pledge. I've shared this with you. Aqaba pledge is the single most important statement in the Islamic religion. It is referenced throughout the Quran. It is referenced here. The Aqaba pledge is that the 20 pagans who became Muslims from Yathrib believed that Muhammad, when he claimed to be the Messiah of the Jews in Yathrib, and they pledged that they would protect Muhammad like they protected their women, and that they would wage war against all mankind. And that is the Pledge of Aqaba. And the motivation was that the Muslim militants could keep 80% of whatever they stole, having to give 20% to the Godfather, of course, and that should they be killed in battle, stealing the wealth of others, engaged in the slave trade, then the deceased would have an express ticket to Allah's brothel, where they would frolic with virginal boys and virginal girls for all time. This was the proposition. Sure, it was stupid, but Muhammad never appealed to bright people. Still doesn't. When we gave our lives in submission, that's what Islam means, in submission. It could have been rendered in Islam here, but it is translated in submission. Every Muslim is a slave to Allah. They are duty-bound to follow the example of Muhammad. If you want to know why 90% of the world's terrorist acts are perpetrated by Muslims, is because they are commanded to follow Muhammad's example, and Muhammad was a terrorist. Now, the reason that Badr was more popular among the people than the Pledge of Aqaba, which started the Islamic era, is because, well, they got to experience the benefit, if you want to call it that, of being ruthless thugs and wallowing in other people's stolen loot. This person says, I was never stronger or wealthier than I was when I followed the Prophet on a Ghazwa terrorist raid. Stolen money. strength through death. Well, that pretty much sums up Islam. This is now the Islam of Muhammad, the Islam of the Quran, the Islam of Allah. There is no other Islam. And you just heard exactly what it represents. This death cult would prosper through terror and robbery. But not everyone was amused. Upon hearing that Muhammad's Mujahideen were on the prowl, the Quraysh sent a delegation out to protect their people and assets. So much for Allah's braggadocio. I arranged for them to meet by surprise. Yeah, even in their own statements, they contradicted what their God said just, what, one hadith previous to this? The Quraysh sent out a delegation to protect their people and assets. Protect them? Yes, because they knew Muhammad and his men were thieving scumbags. This explains why the Quran said Muslims were contemplating a choice between taking easy booty or fighting for doctrinal supremacy. The next hadith from Bukhari as well, volume 5, book 59, number 702. They did not suppose that there would be a great battle. Concerning this, Allah revealed a Quran. Ho, and you longed that other than the armed one might be yours. Quran 8:007. And when Allah, who promised you one of the true groups for you, you wanted the other, the unarmed one. But the one which was armed would be for you, because Allah, who intended to prove and justify the truth by his word and cut off the roots of the disbelievers. To cut off the roots is to kill. This makes Allah and Muhammad mass murderers, because the crime was premeditated. This is not war. This is a criminal enterprise intent on thievery, grand theft, armed robbery, and mass murder. You see, in this case, the people, the Muslims, were after booty. But Allah, he was after blood. It's tough to do this. Now you can have an appreciation why, when I wrote Prophet of Doom right after 9/11 in 2001, I spent years being the first to rearrange the Quran chronologically and set it into the context of Muhammad's life so it could be understood. And then I did somewhere in the range of 5,000 talk radio programs, typically an hour per interview, to share what I had discovered with the world. Offered the book free online at prophetofdoom.net for two decades. And it's rough duty. Muhammad's repulsive. Allah is demonic. Islam is a death cult that celebrates killing, just as the Gazan Muslims did quite recently. It's just as the Muslims, and you can see the video, I've posted many now on X, I even posted on Facebook. You see the videos of Muslims killing gleefully, killing as if it was their highest religious calling, and doing so in a manner that was horrific, mutilating their victims, torturing them, tormenting them, degrading them. It's all part of this religious ritual that bloodlust that Allah instilled in his submissives, today's Muslims. And it's why, after having done that and spent 5 years of my life in this hellish environment of Islam to expose and condemn it. So after 10-7 of 2023, the last thing I wanted was to go back and to update that book. Just as I had updated every one of my other books, some 35 of them, some 5, 10, 15 times over the years, not that one. And I knew it needed to be done. And I knew it was important, more important now after the savagery, because it was just absolute sadistic savagery that was on display by Muslims on 10-7, which makes the progressives who are aligned with them more reprehensible than and immoral than any quasi-enlightened people have ever been in human history. I knew that it was needed, but I didn't want to do it. I even went to Yahweh and said, can I have an excuse here? I don't want to do this. And it was Yahweh saying, you know, I've taken care of you. Now you take care of my people. This is essential to do. And that's why we're doing this Yahweh blog on it. It's why I turned what was Prophet of Doom, a single volume tome, into the 5 volumes now of Goddamn Religion. It's as essential for you to know. It brings me no pleasure in telling it to you, but if you don't know it, there's no way to defend yourself against it. You're being lied to by your political leaders and by your military leaders, Israel. In fact, the entire world is. They were not attacked by Hamas. They were attacked by Muslims. This battle is not against Hamas or Islamic Jihad or Hezbollah. It is against Islam. Islam declared war on Jews and on all mankind 1,400 years ago, and nothing has changed. This is fundamentalist Islam. There is no other Islam. Anyone who tells you any differently is either lying to you out of ignorance or deceiving you to make you easier prey. They inspired Muhammad, Allah, a gang of armed men to attack defenseless civilian enterprises. This one owned by a rival family member. As such, these first Muslims were nothing more than terrorists. And there was no way to discount the source of this condemning citation, as it is confirmed in all 3 hadith collections and detailed in the Quran. You heard that correctly. The reprehensible nature, the motivation, armed robbery, mass murder, cold blood killing, human trafficking, that was part of this terrorist raid by Muhammad and the first Muslims. And this is the terrorist raid that is most defining in Islam. Without it, there is no Islam. It is not only chronicled in the 3 most esteemed hadith collections, there's an entire Quran surah devoted to it. The surah of Ibn Ishaq reports, Ishaq 289, the people answered the prophet's summons. Some eagerly, some reluctantly. The ones that were reluctant knew that kidnapping, thievery, mass murder, and attacking your own family was evil. The history, Al-Tabari 729, states, when Abu Safwan heard that Muhammad's companions were on their way, so much for surprise, to intercept his caravan, he sent a message to the Quraysh. Muhammad is going to intercept our caravan, so protect your merchandise. When the Quraysh heard this, the people of Mecca hastened to defend their property and protect their men, as they were told Muhammad was lying in wait for them. The Sirah then reveals that the unbelievers were acting like believers, while the supposed believers were acting like infidels. This is hard to imagine. Ishaq 290. Some of the Meccans got up to circumambulate the Kaaba. They were actually Petrans, but you get the point. So those who were labeled as infidels, who were the target of this reprehensible act of armed robbery and kidnapping, of bloodletting, they were the ones who got up to circumambulate the Kaaba. They were the ones who sat around the mosque. The text concludes, they wondered why they had allowed this evil rascal to attack their men. You see, Muhammad grew up among them. They knew he was evil. He had threatened to slaughter them. It's just so appalling that a man as despicable as Muhammad, with his perverse desires as this man did, whose behavior and his words were so abysmal, is believed to be a spokesperson for a god who gets his jollies by attacking and killing family, and of course Jews, and whose chief edict is to wage war against all mankind. But this is Islam, make no mistake, there is no other Islam. The pagans were being religious, worshiping Allah and his mosque. The Muslims had abandoned the religion, setting out on a terrorist raid in the month of Ramadan. It's truly befuddling, isn't it, that anyone would believe that this is a religion and that Allah is a god or that Muhammad was a prophet. Ishaq 292, setting out in Ramadan, Muhammad was preceded by two black flags. That's the flag of ISIS today. His companions had 70 camels on which men rode in turns. It's interesting that while the white battle flags of the Mughazi raids inspired by Muhammad, they turned black when the prophet was personally with them. So the two colors of the flags, white and black, if Muhammad was dispatching a raid, but he wanted to stay back with his harem filled with little children as sex toys, he would send them under a white flag. But if Muhammad was actually part of the terrorist raid himself, they paraded under a black flag, sort of like pirates, but absolutely like the Islamic State. Tabari 7, page 38. I have been informed by the authorities that Muhammad set out on 3 Ramadan at the head of 310 of his companions. The immigrants on this day of Badr were 77 men. And the answer were 236. The war banner of the messenger was carried by Ali. The banner of the Ansar was carried by Saad. Islam began with a caste system, with Muhammad serving as lord and tyrant. The immigrants who had left Kaabaville were royalty. The Ansar were the serfs, and then there were the slaves, women, and infidels. Back in Kaabaville, Tabari reports, 7:30, a body of Meccan men was drawn from the clans. Neither the prophet nor his companions heard about this force until they reached Badr, which was on the coastal route the Quraysh caravan had taken from Syria. These passages confirm that Muhammad was on the prowl. They reveal that the caravan was comprised of a poorly protected assemblage of businessmen. And even when Sufyan sent for help, it came in the form of townsfolk. There was no standing army. Petra was a crumbling relic of its former glory and size, with humble traders eking out a modest living. They did not have a police force, much less a military. Before Muhammad and Islam, they hadn't needed either. Eshach 293 to body 7, page 30. The prophet marched forward, and he spent the night near Bedar with his companions. They did not know that the Koresh had come out against them. While the prophet was standing in prayer, asking Allah for help, I guess, to steal, some Koresh water carriers came to a well. Among these was a black slave. Muhammad's men seized him and brought him to the messenger's bivouac. They ordered him to salute Allah's apostle. "Hail, Muhammad," they requested. They questioned him about Abu Sufyan, having no idea that he was not from the caravan. When the slave began to tell them about the protecting force, it was unwelcome news, for the only object of their raid was Abu Sufyan and the booty from his caravan. Picture the scene. The founder of a religion is now out on a terrorist raid with the sole intent to plunder a civilian business, murder some family members, and take others hostage for ransom. Just like 10-7 in Israel. His praying is to ask his God for help so that he can kidnap innocent people and steal their possessions. His fellow militants capture a slave and they torture him, trying to solicit information. They even made him Sieg Heil, Der Führer. All the while, the only ones who deserved to be tortured were Muhammad and his murderous militants. And don't think for a moment it won't happen, since one way or another, all of those Islam has abused deserve to see its founder suffer. You can count on it. I don't know if there was anything more repulsive than commingling religion and torture, although even in this, Muhammad was far from inventive. Almost every religion has done it, including Christianity and every flavor of paganism. Although there were a few, like Judaism and Buddhism, where the practitioners torment themselves instead. Tabati's Tariq History, Volume 7, 30. While the prophet was praying, bowing and prostrating himself, and also seeing and hearing the treatment of the slave, when the slave told him that the Quraysh had come to meet them, they began to beat him, and they called him a liar. "You were trying to conceal the whereabouts of Abu Sufyan and his caravan." They beat him severely, and they continued to interrogate him, but they found that he had no knowledge of what they were looking for. It is my conclusion, having studied history and religion, that Muhammad was the most vile and immoral man to have ever lived. The first Muslims agreed, although their hearts and minds were so corroded by Islam, they didn't seem to care. They think that they are just describing a typical day in the prophetic office. For such immoral and barbaric acts to have been passed on as traditions and linked to the Quran, Muslims must view these terrorist raids, and they do, and the ensuing crimes favorably. They must see such ungodly behavior as a living witness of Allah's cause, an example of how to be a good Muslim. or as I have surmised, while a bad Muslim can be a good person, all good Muslims are bad people. All good Muslims kill for Allah. That is a Quranic necessity that defines a Muslim. Tabari 731. When the slave said, "I am from the Quraysh who have come out against you," they beat him. But when he said, "I am with Abu Sufyan," they left him alone. When the prophet said what they were doing, when the prophet saw what they were doing, he stopped his prayer. Isn't that so lovely of him? He said, "By him who holds my soul, you beat him when he tells you the truth, and you leave him alone when he lies." Muhammad wasn't bothered by Muslims beating a black slave, just by their inept interrogation technique. He wasn't nervous. Mercenaries can be an unruly lot. Ishaq 294. The apostle was afraid the answer would not feel obligated to help him fight without the enemy being the aggressor and attacking in Medina. So this is not defensive. That was even ruled out. And the answer, which are the former pagans, the Arabs and Yathrib that were not Jewish, a small community. The Jews were the larger community until Muhammad perpetrated genocide against them. They hadn't been Muslims long enough to fight and kill for nothing other than financial gain. They weren't sufficiently immoral. Islam has solved that problem. Well, this is further evidence that Muhammad wasn't defending Muslims and Islam as Islamic apologists claim. As proof, he wasn't a sad pirate. The answer surprised him. Ishaq 294, Saad said, "We hear and obey. We are experienced in war, trustworthy in combat. Allah will let us show you something that will bring you joy." The apostle was delighted at Saad's words, which greatly encouraged him. Muhammad shouted, "It is as if I see the enemy laying prostrate." There you go. A dim-witted, immoral Arab from Yathrib who was eager to kill, plunder, and engage in slavery, who was among the group beating a black slave, is now telling Muhammad, "You will see that we're good killers. We'll bring you great joy by the murders that we perpetrate." And Muhammad responded that he was encouraged by the words of this man, such that he could see the enemy laying in the dirt, prostrate, which, by the way, dead and prostrate does tell you a little bit about the prostrate prayer that Muslims perform, doesn't it? The enemy was lying prostrate. So when Muslims prostrate themselves, they're the enemy. And they're dead. Their souls are gone. So Muhammad wasn't inspired nor encouraged by Allah. Of course, he knew Allah was a fraud. He was inspired by a belligerent and sadistic man. This, by the way, is the same man that ordered all of the Jewish men remaining in Yathrib to be decapitated. The same man that orchestrated the rape of their wives, mothers, daughters. He is the same man that provided the edict of Allah and Muhammad that their children be sold into slavery to buy the weapons of war. The founder of Islam was pleased by the prospect of war, and he was encouraged by the thought of his enemy lying prostrate. Now, that's fine if you're Stalin, Mao, or Hitler, but it's bad if you're Muhammad. The Sirah speaks of another interrogation, Ishaq 295. A young man was brought to the apostle and he was beaten too. When the Muslims were displeased with his answers, they beat him soundly, watching the interrogation while performing two prostrations. The prophet interrupted the proceedings and said, "Mecca has thrown us pieces of its liver." But alas, the intended target escaped the raider's grasp. Ishaq 295, Abu Sufyan changed the caravan's direction from the shore road, traveling as quickly as possible. Ishaq 296, when Sufyan saw that he had saved his caravan, he sent word to the Quraysh, "Since you came out to save your caravan, your men, and property, just go back home." Some of the merchant militia left, but Ishaq 296 reports, Abu Jahl said, "Badr was the site of an Arab fair. We're going to spend a few days, slaughter some camels, have a feast, drink some wine, and have some girls play for us." None. Partier said, "We came out to protect our property and defend our men. There's no point in staying to fight," and they returned to Mecca. So now it was a depleted group. We don't know how many, one side versus the other, but they'd never been a very large assemblage of townsfolk. But the ones that were more normal, more moral, more formidable, just all went back home. And you were left now with those who decided that they were going to play with some girls, drink some wine, and slaughter some camels. Think about the foolishness of even that you're in the caravan business and you're going to slaughter camels. On the Muslim front, we discover that Muhammad wasn't much of a general. We're told that a man named Hubab asked him, Ishaq 297, "Did Allah order you to occupy this place so that we have no choice? Or was this position chosen as a matter of opinion for some military tactic?" When Muhammad said that Allah had not spoken to him about it, the answer chief saved the day and ruined the world. The Ishaq 297 reads, "This is not the proper place," Hubab said. "We should go to the well nearest the enemy, stop up all other wells, and deprive them of water." Then Sa'd said, "Prophet, let us build you a booth of palm fronds from which you can watch the battle safely." Apostle blessed and thanked them. And Muslims want to present Muhammad as a great man. They're out of their ever-loving minds. So let the battle begin. Tabari 732. When the Quraysh advanced, Muhammad threw dust in the direction of their faces, and Allah put them to the flight. Meccans, the merchant force, and the prophet's marauders met, and Allah gave victory to his messenger, shamed the unbelievers, and satisfied the Muslims' thirst for revenge on them. To think that this delusional and overwhelmingly immoral caste of malcontents started a religion that is followed by 2 billion people today is just beyond belief. And why anyone protects it, is just, well, it's disgusting. Ignorant, irrational, uninformed, immoral. Eshach 2:97. When the apostle saw them, he cried, Allah, they called me a liar. Destroy them this morning. We'll forgive them. It wasn't that they renounced Allah because Allah was their God long before Allah was Muhammad's God. Nope. Muhammad was lying and they called him on it and he didn't like it. So his new God, who is modeled after Satan, says, you know, when I lie, you have no right to call me a liar. So let me kill him. The Meccans, however, were civilized. Eshach 2:98. Utbah rose to speak. Let us turn back and leave Muhammad to the rest of the Arabs. If we fall upon him, we will be haunted for having slain the son or brother of our kin. As I have said throughout, the Quraysh were the sons and fathers, the brothers of those who lived around the Kaaba. They were Muhammad's kin. He was fighting his own family. He was robbing his own family. It's a special kind of incest, I suppose. And the Quraysh said, let's not do that. We don't want to fight them, because if we fight them, we're going to be killing our sons and our brothers. We can't do this. Tabari 752, the prophet said to his companions, you are the same number as the people of Saul on the day he met Goliath. First of all, this was written long after Muhammad wouldn't have known Saul from Santa Claus. And so, no. But anyway, it's not even close. Saul led an army of 200,000 dedicated men. And little Mo was sitting in his palm frond hut, tossing sand behind the backs of 310 ragtag raiders. Saul did not confront Goliath. Dod did. The Israelites were fighting for their survival in their homeland, trying to repulse a wretched and violent foe, the Philistines. The Muslims were out hunting for booty. They had nothing in common. But such is the nature of the Quran. Had Muhammad been a real prophet, he would never have lied to his mercenaries in this manner. Had he any courage or character, he would have followed Dod's example. Well, it was too late for that, since the Israelite king never went out on a civilian raid. He never, ever raided merchants. He only fought to defend his people from outside aggression. Tabari 7, number 52, Eshach 2:99. Aswad, an ill-tempered man, took the field and Hamza came out to meet him. In the encounter, Hamza cut off Aswad's foot and half of his leg. Hamza pursued him and struck a blow, killing Aswad. After this, Utbah took the field and issued a challenge to single combat. Three young Ansar Muslims came forward to meet him. How could Aswad have been the ill-tempered man if he was just going about his business and bothering no one, and had his foot and leg cut off by someone who had come to rob him? How can a response to single combat include three militants unless they were too dumb for math? You'll notice that the Muslims knew everyone's name. All of these men had been former neighbors and friends. Many were family, and that makes the intent to rob, to kidnap, to murder them all the more sinister and indeed incestuous. Apart from the belligerence of a few, it appears that the offense stalled and that the immigrants had cowered. So Der Fuhrer commanded Tabati 752, Ishaq 299, "Arise, Ubayyah, Hamza, and Ali." It was no time before Hamza had killed Sheba and Ali had killed Walid. Ubayyah and Utbah each inflicted a blow upon his adversary. Hamza and Ali then turned on Utbah with their swords and finished him off. They lifted up their companion, Ubaidah, to safety. His foot had been cut off and the marrow was flowing out of it. When they brought him to Muhammad, Ubaidah said, Am I not a martyr, O Messenger of Allah? Oh, yes, indeed, the Prophet replied. What scum. What a retrobate. Muhammad was the most disgusting man who ever lived. Of course, now we have our first entrant to the Islamic paradise. Literally the first one. Should it actually exist? Can you imagine the surprise on his face when he discovered that it wasn't? Oh no, as Muhammad had described, and that Allah was indeed waiting for him in Sheol, hell. Tabari 754. Muhammad turned toward his new Qibla and he said, "Allah, if this band perishes today, you will be worshipped no more." Well, since the Meccan moon gods were, I guess, in sparse supply or in demand as well, and demonic deities weren't preferred, he may have been right. Truly amazing. If this terrorist raid does not go well, according to Islam's founder, then Allah would be worshipped no more. That's what it came down to. Now, this is a fine place for us to conclude this, the third episode of Muhammad's criminal enterprise and how war made a prophet. It is the story of the first terrorist raid that was successful in Islam's history. It is appalling, disgusting beyond imagination. And yet this is the truth of Islam. This is the Islam of Muhammad, of the Quran, and of Allah, and of the first Muslims. There is no other Islam. Any other presentation of it would be an outright fabrication and lie. And so we'll continue this story in our next episode. I thank you very much for listening. This is the Yahweh Blog, and I am your host, Craig Wynn.